Good evening, one and all. Halfway through another week, almost springtime. Clocks in America, and I say America only, went forward last weekend. The rest of the world does it this weekend. And it's like, last week we had Mother's Day. That is, I most have had gone on my soapbox about this before. Mother's Day, Mothering Sunday, has been around for thousands of years, over 1,000 years. Mother Church, Mother Earth, etc. A lady in the late 1800s in America wanted to start it up over here. She approached Hallmark. Hallmark said, "When's your mother's birthday?" And that's when Mother's Day in America started. So, an American and Hallmark invention, not original Mother's Day, which got me confused because it was Mothering Sunday, Mother's Day last week, and of course I almost forgot to send my mother a card. Just about remembered in time, because of course I didn't see it anywhere except on Facebook, where some people say, "Oh yes, happy Mother's Day, Mothering Sunday." Anyway, I am here, and so is my guest. What can I say? The thing is, a lot of us, we start off writing. Yeah, like me, I've done my couple of books, and then I started doing the shows, and from then on, the shows have taken priority. I still sort of do the odd parody, very odd sometimes. And one of these days I might get back to it. And my guest, he was a best-selling author, and then he sort of stopped. Don't know why, but he has now released a much look forward to new book. Better get to introduce him, haven't I? Because on the show today, I have the one and only Timothy B. McCann. Hi, Timothy. How are you doing?
I am doing fantastic and so excited about being on the show. Thank you so very much for the invitation.
It is great to have you on the show. I better let this. You are a self-proclaimed political buff. A video game enthusiast, a golfer, a community activist, and a pastor, and a best-selling author. Sounds great, doesn't it, when you run it off like that?
It's an eclectic mixture of things, isn't it? It's like a gumbo of different experiences.
You're right. I can't laugh because I'm the same. It's got author, musician, singer, radio host, sports fanatic, and lover of a good beer and a pint and a laugh.
It's like that. Makes for really good writing.
Goodness sake, you've got to live it in a way half the time to write about it. And you started like me. I can remember doing this quite an early age. You were writing love letters for people at your school. I remember doing poems for some of my mates at school. So that's where your creative writing came to fruition then, I guess.
Yes, I guess I needed that validation. I initially began my creative impulses as a artist, a visual artist.
Oh, okay.
And I would draw, and I wanted to be, I love Norman Rockwell.
Oh, and me too, yes.
And I think in retrospect, we love him because he told stories with paintings.
Yes.
Every one of his paintings, there's a full beginning, middle, and end of a story.
Yeah.
And so I wanted to do the same thing. But for some reason, my artistic talents moved from the visual. It moved to music, which I did some producing. And then it moved to writing. And by the time I got into college, I played football out in the state of Oklahoma.
Uh-huh.
And one of my roommates stole a love letter. I wrote a love letter to this young lady, and he kind of plagiarized the love letter. And when I found out about it, I was like, "David, you can't take the letter, because if your girlfriend meets my girlfriend, we got a problem." I'm not
going to
look too good here, guys.
No, it's funny what you say about Norman Rockwell. I'm actually sitting here looking at the picture of the kid in the doctor's checking, the one that where he's standing there checking the doctor's certificate before he gets his injection to make sure. And as you say, it's the whole story. This young kid, they're ready to have his injection, doctor's prepping the injection, and the kid's checking the diploma to make sure he's qualified to give it to him. I mean, it's a story there in that one picture. It's funny. Huh?
No, I think that, you know, when you mentioned that picture, it came to mind immediately because there's even a story in the way the adults are looking at the kid.
Yeah.
I mean, every single aspect of it. And that's a true artist when you are able to take the most simple things in life and create a full narrative to it.
Yeah, indeed.
And I always admired that about him.
Yeah, indeed. And there's so many different characters and stuff like that. I know. I was lucky enough. We'll get on to the books in a minute. I was lucky enough to pick up a book of, well, it's meant to be 50 of his prints. It's only got like about 25 in there, but every other page is a print you could literally, you know, pull out and frame. So I got so many of them, and it's great. And the, you know, I've got the frames. I've just got to, it's like everything else, get the time to put the two things together. But it's great being able, I know I've got that in my line. But yeah, as I said, as we were saying, you know, it's interesting what you're saying about the painting and the music and stuff like that. I mean, you know, it's a gene. You've got a creative gene. People have that, whether they're artists, whether they're musicians, whether they're, in your case, you know, that, and then you found your niche in writing. And I think it was something that, was it like 1999 you brought your first book out or something like that?
Yeah, 1999. I was able to get published. We signed a deal in 1997. It was for my first novel. And when that novel came out, well, when I wrote the novel, I just knew I wanted to write a novel. I had no idea what genre.
Right.
I had no idea the marketing of it. I just wanted to tell a story. And, you know, to be honest, I think whether you're 9 or 99, we're all attracted to the words, let me tell you a story. If I say those words, I got everybody's attention.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to tell a story. And I was able to tell it, and the darn thing became a national bestseller.
Terrific.
And I wrote three others, and as you mentioned earlier, kind of walked away from the game. But I thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed just the art and the craft of writing, just being alone with that page and being like Hemingway. You're talking about living a full life. He lived about five people.
Oh, my goodness, yes. Indeed.
I stole a few lives.
Right. But interesting what you say about the age stuff. One of my favorite reviews for my books was a lady ordered the book for her son. And she says, my son doesn't read very, you know, because it was a young adult book. My son doesn't read much, you know, and I read about yours and about England, America and sports and this, that, you know, all sorts of stuff in it. And she said, so I got it for him and I gave it to him. And I didn't see him for the rest of the day. He sat down and read it right through from cover to cover, she says. So she said, well, I saw it lying there, so I picked it up, and blow me down, I couldn't put it down either. So I finished reading it, and the next day I came in, and her mother was reading it. So it went through three generations in a week and appealed to all of them, which I think is, you know, you can't ask for more than that, can you?
That is beautiful. You know, I always tell people who write for young adults or even more so children, that is the most difficult audience to write for.
Crikey. Oh, they tell you how.
What I do is easy compared to what you guys do. That's very fascinating.
Believe me, if it's no good, they tell you. Yeah, I had a lady on the show who'd written a historical romance. And she was a pretty well-known author. She had about 20 books out. You know, she had a big publishing company and stuff like that. She tried to write a younger book. And what she did, she went to the school and she, all these publishing houses saying, oh, she's terrific. You've done really good, blah, 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 blah. Anyway, she decided she went to read some of it at the school and gave all the kids in this class a copy of the book. And then 2 weeks later, she came back. And she asked, you know, what do you think? And it was tumbleweed time. You know, we don't say things like that. We don't do things like that. This isn't stuff like that. And that, you know, she said, you know, they were right. But they were the only ones that would tell me.
Yes. So they can be brutally honest.
Oh, they can.
Tough crowd you got there. Yeah. Audience.
So, you basically took a break from your writing. Mm-hmm. Life catches up, like everything, and in your case, your business and everything like that, obviously, and everything. And you've got to wait for the inspiration as well, of course. But now, you come out with a new book, which is Divorcing Atlanta.
Divorcing Atlanta. You know, I thought I had written my last sentence. I had told everybody I'll never write again. It's been 20 years.
Wow.
I mean, basically, the last book was published in 2002.
Wow.
And so it's been almost 20 years since I was published, and I just thought it was over. And, you know, the funny thing about it is, when I left writing, because I left writing because my kids were getting older and I wanted to pursue some things in ministry as well.
Uh-huh.
So I thought, you know what, let me take a break from this. And I decided that season had passed. The most difficult thing to do when you walk away from writing is to quiet those voices.
Oh, my goodness. Head. The characters keep in your mind.
Oh, my God. They won't shut up.
Yeah, that's what I say. We discuss this quite often on the show about the fact that no matter how you plan a book out, you have no say. The characters come along, they tell you what to do. Minor characters want major roles. Some even demand their own book. You know, and it's like people say about writer's block. Oh, no, it's not writer's block. It's that the characters don't want to talk to you that day because you mostly ignored them the day before or something.
Exactly. I thoroughly believe that they will come, they will sit with you.
Yeah.
It's almost as if you could see them.
Oh, crikey.
And for years, it took about 4 years to stop divorces. Yeah. You see a guy walking down the street.
Yeah.
The guy, I can still see the visual. The guy he pulled a rose off of this bush and he had this blanket draped around him, as if he had slept outside the previous night. I'm thinking, there's a story. There's a walking story.
It is so hard.
Where did this guy come from?
I got to halfway through the sort of a follow-up book or a third book in this series, right? And then I started doing the radio shows because I was sort of, I did a couple with the book and, the people who were running the shows, I thought, oh my goodness, they're hopeless. I'm going to lead this show myself. I can do better than that. So I started off and then I did two a week, then three a week, and at one time four a week, And so it's there. It's halfway through. I think it's like chapter 35 I'm on. So I'm about the same. No, it must have been like 2008 or something like that, or 10. So, there's hope for me yet to finish this book.
There is hope for you yet, believe it. It can happen.
So, this book is not a how-to book, is it? It's actually about relationships and, people's worlds are basically torn apart with divorce. Is that what you cover, all the different aspects, the confusion, the anger, the hurt, and everything like that?
Well, I don't know if you have heard about it, but 2020 was a tough year.
Oh, my goodness, Yeah, I remember vaguely.
You vaguely remember that? Yeah, it was a pretty rough year there. And because of 2020, because of COVID, because of the shutdown, because of all these things going on and some things happening in my personal life, I decided to journal. Uh-huh. Journaling became writing a full-fledged novel. And I started reflecting on marriages. And on the cover of the book, it has the words, it's the words between I do and until death do us part that kill us.
Very true.
And the impetus behind that is we so often focus on the big things that drive people apart. It's his work. It's the affair. It's the this. It's the that.
Yeah.
All those things are the fruit, but the root is the words. And the words is what builds the marriage. And if the words are the right words, those other, the fruit doesn't grow out the way in a negative way. So I wanted to write a book that shows how words, the importance of words in our language, in our relationship. So that's the, that was the impetus of this book, showing how negative words can affect in such a detrimental way. And hopefully in reading this book, they will find not a way to get divorced, but a way to heal their marriage.
Right.
If I've done my job as a writer, that's what they've done.
Indeed.
My job, I often say, is to edutain the reader.
Okay.
I want to educate them, but I don't want it to be preachy. But I do want them to walk away and think, I get it. I've learned something, even though it was for entertainment purposes. Mm.
And that's a very important thing, that you know, as well as obviously it being a good story, you're actually educating people at the same time. And I think that's that's when you get a novel that becomes very, you know, very, shall I say, interesting, not interesting, but very, a book that many people would want to read, because they read it as a story, and perhaps a lot of the, a lot of them end up putting themselves in the characters' places, because that's like, you know, that you get these, you have people on the shows, you know, been in an abusive relationship or something like that, and they're reading it as a novel, as a story, but as they're reading, subconsciously, as they're reading it, that character, the main character, isn't a character, it's them. And they're sort of thinking of stuff that they've been through and that's happened to them. And it sounds like sort of thing, you know, with your Divorcing Atlanta as well.
Yes. Well, that is my job as a writer. I want to make you intrigued enough by the main character. You don't have to love them. You don't even have to like them. But I want you to be intrigued by them. Mm. You know, sometimes people fascinate us in a way that we just can't look away. We may not want them for dinner, but there's just something about them. So as I'm writing these characters, I want you to be fascinated by their journey. And along the way, take bits and pieces of what they do and apply it to your life. I mean, look at Stephen King, totally different kind of writer.
Mm.
But he's able to immerse you into the story to the point where people will say they are afraid to open a book.
Yes.
Now, when you are afraid to open a book because something might bite you or eat you, then he's done his job. You become one with the pages.
That's
I think that is good. The mission of every writer.
That's a good way of saying it. Very, I like that. I'll remember that. it's basically a family saga, is it? Like four people, couple of marriages. Now, I know you know there are a lot of things you touch within this. Interracial relationships. Oh, I'm trouble saying that. Interracial relationships. That's one of the things you go through, you touch in this book, isn't it?
Yes, we most certainly do. She is, her name is Tabitha. Tabitha is, she's a debutante light young lady from Alabama. Her father was in the Klan. She grows up to marry a black man from Maryland who becomes a U.S. congressman. But her past, she's really run away from her past, but it comes back to haunt her at the end of the book. So that was really fascinating to write, because I wanted to see how that relationship can be affected with everything from both people's pasts. And I don't want to give the book away, but I definitely wanted to delve into that situation as well.
Right. And you do go on, touch the about the clergy and building a ministry and stuff like that, because one of the things I know is the amount of suicide amongst clergy.
And I'm glad you know, I've been doing a lot of interviews before this book comes out, and you are literally the first person I've spoken to who really know about that, because many people do not know there has been a rash of pastors who have literally put a gun to their heads or taken an overdose. And the thing about it is, you know, in the Bible, we talk about how the shepherds feed the sheep. Well, who feeds the shepherds?
Right.
And sometimes pastors, and I this comes not from me, but from my therapist, because I think we all should have a good therapist.
Right.
Sometimes pastors can have a God complex.
Yeah.
And we want to heal the world, and that's just us being good people. When sometimes you need to be healed yourself.
Yeah, because
so I wanted to write about a character like that as well.
Mm-hmm. You must feel helpless sometimes, mm-hmm, when you look around and you see the world or see something that's happening and think, why? You know, I'm preaching about forgiveness and stuff like that. How can you do this? It's beyond me. It must get very, in this day and age, it must get very hard for a person to fulfill their beliefs and follow what, you know, they've been taught is right to do, because it's everywhere you look. It's no wonder it's the stress on religious people is so hard. I mean, even the Catholic Church is looking at possible marriages, mm-hmm, now. You know, it really is. It's very hard. And then you've got sort of things that might have happened in the past and everything.
Yeah.
It's very hard to sort of be that strong, I guess, to keep going with those beliefs.
You know, you take life itself is just hard on a marriage, on people itself. When you compound that, you're carrying the weight of other people's problems as well. So you're carrying the weight of their problems, but you've got problems, and there's no way to vent your problems because you really can't share them with people, because sometimes you don't want to look vulnerable because you have to be the one with the stiff upper lip, and you don't want to be anybody to think that you are not ready or competent for the job. So you don't know how sometimes to relieve that pain, that pressure that life brings to you. And sometimes it can affect your marriage, because outwardly you have to be the loving, happy, perfect couple.
Yeah.
But then behind closed doors, sometimes that's not the case. And you don't want that to be portrayed to the public, because first thing they're thinking is, oh my gosh, if the pastor and his wife cannot make it, then surely we can't make it. So you want to give them the very best appearance, but sometimes that's not actually realistic.
No, it's interesting. On the reverse of that, and I understand what you're saying, you know, the words mean it, and in the words between you and everything like that. There's a French singer called Charles Aznavour, and he had a big hit. I think his big hit was She, most likely, because it was in Four Weddings and a Funeral, amongst other stuff. But anyway, he did a song, and it was late teens, I sort of picked this up. And the song is You Have to Learn. And there's a line in it, which I just think is very, that people need to listen to sometimes. And it's, you have to learn to leave the table when love's no longer being served.
Whoa, I love that.
And
that's very difficult, but I love that line.
It is, but you do see people who are in a relationship that's not working, that you know, abusive or what have you. And they don't. They stay there, perhaps, because, well, you know, their mother was hit by their father, or, you know, what will the friends and family think, or and stuff like that. But on the other hand, like you do in your book, you know, there are people that don't look to see how, you know, they can mend things, how they can, you know, forgive which is another part of your book.
Very, very true. And sometimes we're just afraid. You know, it's the fear of what's next.
Yeah.
So we'll hold on to what we have. It's that old thing about the devil, you know.
Yes.
So we'll hold on to what we have, even though it's not healthy. But I believe the most important thing to remember, and it goes in line sort of with the song you heard, is this. All relationships are not eternal. Some of them are just temporary. Some of them are just for a season.
Yeah.
And when it's over, you have to sometimes breathe in, breathe out, and try to figure out what did I learn from that relationship? What was the takeaway?
Yeah.
And that relationship could be catapulting you to something much better. But as long as you hold on to something that's destroying you, you'll never get the best
thing in life
meant for you. Yeah,
without a doubt. Now Divorcing Atlanta has released the floodgates again. Is there another book in the pipeline?
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. I have literally like 10 books lined up.
There you go. The floodgates are open.
They are so open. I can't write fast enough. In anticipation for this book coming out, I did a book of short stories, which is out now, and it's on my website, which I'll share in a moment. But it's a book of short stories that we put out called The Book of Love.
Mm-hmm.
And that I dropped that on Valentine's Day. But then Divorcing Atlanta comes out. I'm writing a book about the death penalty. And I'm also writing a book about a different kind of interracial relationship. And it's actually taken from a true story, whereby this white businessman in New York met this black woman in Maryland, and he passed as being black. He told her that he was 1/8 white, black, so legally he was a black person when he really wasn't, and she accepted him. So it's kind of a twist on a forbidden love.
Wow. Story.
And I am so excited about researching it now, but that's a different type of story.
Yeah.
The struggles they had in that relationship.
That's That's different view, point of view, yeah.
And this takes place in 1920. So as a writer,
oh my goodness, right, yeah.
Writing pieces that are time pieces that you go back in time. I love the research and things like that, so. That's exciting as well.
Well, what's been exciting, Timothy, is having you on the show. It's been really great chatting to you. But what I'm going to do now is hand the show over to you so you can tell everybody where people can find more about you and, of course, your books.
Thank you so very much. And you know what? I've never seen 30 minutes go by so fast.
There you go.
I believe the clients are taking this 10-minute conversation. No, thank you so very much for the invitation. My books are all right now available on Amazon, but you can also go to our website. And the website is easy to remember right now. If you just write down getthebookoflove.com. GetTheBookOfLove.com. It takes you right to my website, and you'll see where you can order my brand new book of short stories, 10 wonderfully crafted, if I might say so myself, short stories. But also, it'll put you on my mailing list so that when Divorcing Atlanta is released, you'll be the very first to know. GetTheBookOfLove.com.
There you go. Timothy, it's been great chatting to you. Good luck with the books. And perhaps when that next one comes out, you'll come back and chat to us again.
You better believe it, my friend.
Anyway, thank you so much for being a guest today. It's been a great pleasure.
My pleasure.
Well, there you go. Great chat there with Timothy B. McCann. And as he says, thebookoflove.com. Or else you can also, there's a pastortimothy.com. I'm not sure if they one takes the other. Anyway, these out there, great books. This new book, very, very interesting. And I'm sure a lot of people will relate to that. And there's more coming. Now, as we said, now the floodgates have been opened up after that rest for 20 years or whatever. It's time to open them up and start right again. Anyway, that's it for now. I will be back on Sunday at... between 5 p.m. Eastern and 6 p.m. Eastern with Those Were the Days, music from the 20th century. And we're continuing with our One Hit Wonders for show number 199, would you believe? So One Hit Wonders again on Sunday at 5 to 6. And then from 6 to 7, the Swinging 60s, music from the 60s, not just from the British invasion, but from around the world. And, of course, we have our music quiz in that as well. Anyway, that's it for now. I will see you on A Book and a Chat next Tuesday. Until then, as always, we have one thing left to say. Don't forget, make sure it's working.